This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb.
I've made no secret of my support of the South Sudanese community in Melbourne. I travelled to South Sudan with SBS in September for their Go Back to Where You Came From show for the sole purpose of giving myself more credibility with which to fight conservative politicians and news services back here in Australia, because I felt they were unfairly demonising Sudanese people for the purpose of serving the same old racist agenda and winning votes. I'm constantly challenged to speak to a victim of the so-called African gangs. So here I am, speaking to a victim. Her name is Elaine. She's 76 years old and suffering terribly from the effects of PTSD brought on by the two robberies she was subjected to by groups of black teenagers. I need to make it clear that Elaine's story, harrowing as it is, doesn't change the facts. The facts are that people born in Sudan made up only 1% of all recorded offenders in Victoria in 2017. So we're much more likely to be assaulted in Victoria by a white Victorian. But they also had the highest rate of offending in terms of population share. What that means basically is that while the number of offenders is very low, the percentage of offenders born in Sudan, particularly male offenders under the age of 25, is comparatively very high. I've shared a very helpful ABC News article on our Facebook page. It's got graphs, which helped me a lot. So if you're interested in those numbers, go and check that out. We definitely have a problem, but the problem we have isn't the one that the tabloid media and conservative side of politics want you to think it is. Melbourne isn't under siege from African gangs. May I remind you, this is the city that lived through an actual gangland war that ended barely 10 years ago. So we do know a gang when we see one. And I don't remember any politicians suggesting that Melburnians were too scared to go out for dinner when Carl Williams and the Carlton crew were shooting each other in the streets, in suburban pubs and at kids' footy clinics. Do you? Did anyone suggest at any time that those blokes should be deported to anywhere? No. I wonder what the difference here could possibly be. Anyway, as you may have noticed, I have a tendency to get caught up in my fury at the bullshit peddled by opportunists in these situations, and I forget the victims, which is unforgivable. So, thanks to Elaine, I will never do that again. Her life's been destroyed by 10 young men who, for whatever reason, decided to rob a jewellery shop she's worked in happily for over 20 years. Not once, but twice. I don't agree with everything Elaine has to say here. Most notably, I don't think Victorian Premier Dan Andrews is a stupid head. So just remember that when you hear it. But also, I can't fact check everything that she says here, but we will have someone from Victoria Police on in the next few weeks to help us out with that. I did think she deserved to be able to say everything she wanted to say, though. So this conversation is pretty much unedited. There are sips of tea and crunches of Bickies included because Elaine invited me to her house, which was very kind and very brave.
First one was on the 25th of October 16.
Mm.
And 3 months later, on the 14th of January, 17.
Right. And how long had you been at the shop?
20-odd years. I was never a nervy person or anything like that, but now you've only got to go boo at me and I'm...
I bet.
Scared stiff.
Yeah. So, you were working in the jewellery shop. You were the accountant, was that
right?
That's
right.
So you're at the back?
This particular, both times,
mm-hmm.
because the two partners were away, I was on the desk on the floor.
Oh, so normally not.
No.
So both these times you happened to be out the front in the shop.
Mm.
Where was the shop or where is the shop?
Toorak Road, Toorak.
Oh,
in
okay.
the village.
In the village, Toorak Village.
Mm.
Okay. You've been there a long time, the shop?
Yeah, it's been there 40-odd years, 41 years we've been there.
Okay, so I can't imagine. I honestly just can't sort of visualise or imagine what it would feel like. So you're in the shop there, which is your second home.
I was sitting like this at my computer
mm-hmm.
doing the paperwork.
Daytime?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
10 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
They came through the door and straight to my head, and the others are smashing all the cabinets.
How many people?
Four in the shop and one outside in the car.
Four men?
If you call them men, from 16 to... the guy that had the gun at my head was older. He was in his 20s, but the others three were 16, 17, 18 and 19.
Wow. And physically quite imposing, I guess.
Very frightening.
Tall.
I mean, of tall, black, hoodies, faces covered, you know, masks, things on them.
Yeah. Goodness me, you're a small lady. May I ask how old you are?
78.
So you're 74 at the time?
I was 70.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyone else in the shop?
Yes, Stephen and I.
Okay.
He's just the manager of the sales on the floor.
Mm-hmm. That's right, the boss wasn't there.
No, both the owners, which is that one there, and I haven't got the other one's photo up. Both of them were away at the time. One was a Tuesday, the 25th, and the other one was a Saturday.
So you and Stephen were in the shop. You were sitting down at your computer.
Mm.
All of a sudden, bang through the door.
Crash, bang, boom, done.
Four men, three of them start smashing the glass counters, and one of them comes to you and puts...
All the cabinets, taking... They had bags, putting all the stuff in. And then he said, take me to the safe, see, because he knew what I was doing there.
Mm.
And I sort of was gobsmacked and I couldn't move. I was petrified.
Mm.
And then he whacked me on the arm with the gun. And then I stood up and he put the gun to my back and led me towards the safe. And as I got to the stairs to go up to the safe, Stephen came out and pushed me out the back of the shop and said, get out. Started screaming at the four of them.
Stephen said that,
yeah.
Even though this guy had a gun?
Yeah, yep.
God.
Yeah. Stephen's gay. And they're not frightened of... They like a bit of drama.
Do they?
Yes.
And they're not frightened of these blokes?
No.
I did not know that.
No. No, they're not.
So with that, what happened? Don't tell me that he did actually scare them off.
Yep.
Oh.
They kept grabbing, and as he kept saying, get out of my effing shop, effing shop, you know, and the shop was just a mess.
Yeah.
There was stuff all over the floor. Oh,
glass.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
So the shop was a mess. Stephen's chased these guys out.
Yeah. This is the first time.
But they still got a fair bit of gear, yeah?
Oh, they got nearly $300,000 worth of jewellery.
Holy hell.
Mm.
What's happening out in the street out front? Is anyone? Are people noticing?
Everybody's standing around.
Oh, just watching.
Watching. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And then when they ran out the front, I mean, did they get in a car? Or
there was a car with a driver in it and they just jumped in and took off.
God.
Hmm.
Were people taking photos or videos? Because it feels like everyone films everything now. So did they get the rego of the car and all that or...?
Oh, yeah, they knew where they had all that.
Yeah.
They had photos. They had everything.
Mm-hmm.
We got them all. We got them all.
Okay.
Yeah, the whole 10 both times, 5 each time. We got the whole lot.
Wow. Mm. So...
And I went to court for all of them.
So it was different guys both times?
Oh, yeah. There was only one guy that was the same guy that came... from the first time, and the other four were all different ones. And they didn't have a gun the second time. Well, they didn't produce a gun the second time because nobody was in the shop. They just run in and start smashing all the cabinets. This was on a Saturday morning, the second one.
Right. So after the first one, let's go back to the first one. So you're left there in the shop. They've run away.
Yep.
I guess people come in, do they, and say, you okay, you okay?
No, we locked the door.
Right.
After Stephen threw them out.
You and Stephen are in there. You call the police?
Oh, the police, yes. They came 35 minutes after they left. The ambulance had been and gone.
Yes.
And then we had to go down to the police. I said to the police when they got there, can you please tell me how come 35 minutes it's taken you to get to our shop from Paran Police Station, and when you took us from the shop back to Paran to do our statement, it took 2 minutes.
Mm.
Please tell me. Please explain. Oh, they said we didn't have any cars. I said, well, what are these in the backyard here? I said, there's 8 police cars here.
Mm.
I said, don't lie to me. And then they never said any more. That was it. Stephen said the same when he was doing his interview. How come it took you 35 minutes from there to here and to bring us back? It took us 2 minutes.
And it seems like a pretty serious call out.
Oh, well, the police, I think, are frightened of them. The police never get... There's been 39 jewellery robberies and the police have never got there at all on any occasion of all those 39 robberies.
Never got there during the robbery?
Never got there while they've been rung up and told to come. Always at least a half an hour after. Not once.
So how long after the first robbery did they round up the guys?
Oh, it took them a while. I can't remember really. They said they were chasing them. Now, they told us they were chasing them around the Alexander Avenue. The boys in court told us they never went to Alexander Avenue. They were down in Burke Road going across that way. So, I mean, they lied to us again, the police.
I mean, it's interesting that you believe the boys by the time you get to court, though, and not the police.
Well, the police have lied to us so much.
Yeah, but the boys robbed you. Maybe they were lying.
No, they weren't lying.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're crooked on the police, though.
Well, I mean, all the jewellery stores are.
Yeah, are they?
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine being held up in a shop like that and they don't turn up even after the ambulance has been and gone?
Yeah.
And then the police turn up and say, oh, how are you? You okay? And, you know, okay, why weren't you here when you were rung? 2 minutes away. They would have got them straight away.
Mm.
But then, of course, they had to... What happened was the boys told us that they were employed by Lebanese guys, not the big boss. Well, I suppose it was the big boss who was organising these other guys. They picked up the guys.
Who's they?
The Lebanese men that paid them. Okay. They got $500 for every robbery they did.
That's not much if you're robbing $300,000 worth of jewels, is it?
Well, to a Lebanese, it's a fortune. To a Sudanese, it's a fortune.
I suppose, but anyway, go on.
Well, two of the boys, or three of them, had done the robbery the day before in a jewellery shop, our jewellery shop, two other jewellery shops. So it adds
up. That's my fault, Elaine. I'm asking for a raise. Listen to me.
Yeah, you're asking for a raise. I don't even get paid.
I know. Listen to me. I'm thinking I should get more if I'm doing this. But you reckon, because I had heard the rumour that Lebanese...
It's true. The Lebanese guy had a jeweller shop and he operated the whole thing. He operated these men that gave these boys $500 for doing the robbery, right? And they didn't get that until they'd gone and taken the bags and given to them. When they left our shop, right, they got into the car and then they gave the bags over to these guys, right?
Yeah.
And they took the jewellery. They got their $500. But the night before, they took them all to a motel in South Yarra, gave them drugs and prostitutes.
Hang on. The Lebanese guys took the Sudanese guys?
Yes, to the motel.
Right.
And supplied them with prostitutes and drugs.
Right. The night before the robbery.
Yes.
Now, where are you getting this information from?
The boys that did it told us.
Right.
Mm. All of them, the same. They told us the same story.
Both lots?
Yep. Ten of them.
Wow.
And they were individually interviewed. and they all told the same story.
What did the police make of it? Did they have they commented on this to you? Do they believe that?
Oh, they don't say anything to us.
Oh. And this Lebanese person has never been charged?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was with that, with this crime?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. My word. Yeah.
Oh.
Mm. Mm. Because police went in plain clothes into his warehouse and found our jewellery and other people's jewellery because our jewellery's marked with our name.
Mm.
That's how they caught him. Because they were tipped off.
Yeah.
From other jewellers in the building, that that's what was happening.
Blimey.
Mm.
But you went back to work after that first robbery. How long after that did you... I mean, how did you cope psychologically after the first robbery?
I was off for 10 weeks.
10 weeks, mm. Wow.
Then I went back the day that we were robbed again.
No.
Yes, I was there for 3 hours.
Elaine.
And we were robbed again.
No.
Yeah, and I shouldn't have been there. My days were Monday and Tuesday, but the lass that worked on Saturday, and the boys being away, I had to go in because there was no staff, only Stephen and I.
Not you and Stephen again.
Yep. 3 hours I was back at work and it happened again.
Did Stephen have time off?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You're not like me, though. Stephen's...
He's gay.
Yeah. Doesn't...
Mm.
And he's only young.
Right.
It makes a lot of difference.
Yeah.
When you're 70-something and it happens to you twice in 3 months, it's...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I went back to work after it first happened and then I got shingles.
Yeah.
2 months, nearly two, a month and a half afterwards, and then that's when I got shingles and I was off, I think, about between 8 and 10 weeks.
Yeah.
And then I went back on the 14th of February and I was there for 3 hours, 9 o'clock till 12 o'clock they hit us.
No.
Mm. Yeah.
So again, you're on the floor where you're not normally, and we're again sitting there at your computer?
No, neither of us were on the floor. It was the tennis.
Tennis was on?
Lawn tennis was on, and we were doing the window for the tennis. I was out at my office out the back. Stephen was on the floor, and then he did all that and came out the back. And when he walked out the back, I said, Stephen, have a look. And smash, 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 smash. I said, Stephen, don't go out, just let him go. So we stayed out the back, and then one headed towards the back, and then Stephen went out and said, get out of this shop now. They were a lot younger boys.
Were they?
Yeah. So they ran. They took about, I think it was about 180,000 that time. They were only young boys. A lot of watches and things they took. Yeah, so then I went back to work and I was back at work from January until May, and then I had another attack of the shingles and I haven't been back to work since because I've had 7 bouts of it since.
Is that May 2017?
Yep.
Okay. And you've had 7 bouts of shingles, so that's roughly, that's less than 18 months, that's about sort of 16 months or something.
Yep.
7 bouts of shingles.
Yep.
Now, you've also met a number of your attackers.
Yes.
Come face to face with them and had the opportunity to tell them what they've done to you. Talk us through that, those opportunities. How did that happen?
Well, they have court hearings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go to, Stephen and I went to a child out at Parkville to the centre out there.
Oh, to the youth detention centre.
Yeah, wow. And then that's where we did most of that. And then the last one was in Camberwell, and that really threw me.
After the break, we'll hear more about Elaine's meeting with her attackers in their various correctional institutions.
Coming up on Australian True Crime, we make some plans with Elaine. But first, she tells us about coming face to face with her attackers. Some of them are sorry, and some of them aren't.
One was repentive, but the other one was really... You could see the badness in it, even the police and my psychologist, and that was there with me, and they said you could see the bad in him. He was really not like his other brother. And, you know, all the parents, when I spoke to the parents and said, how come you didn't know where your children were? And they said, they lie. They used to tell them so many lies. The two boys, the brothers, the father said... oh, well, they told us that they were over at their cousin's place. They were staying over there the night. And I said, did you ring up the cousin to find out if that was true or not? And he went, looked at me and went, no. And the policeman said, why not? If they're telling lies, why didn't you ring them to see that they were there? And then I said to the nice boys, so where were you when your father, you know? He said, well... Well, I've just told you, they took us to a motel and gave us prostitutes and drugs and told us we had to do the job at such a time in the morning.
How old were they at that time?
17. One was 17, one was 16.
Well, a lot of people, a lot of parents don't know where their 16 and 17-year-old sons are.
Why not? Listen, my four were 16 and 17. I knew every move they made.
I get that, but a lot of parents don't. And I think I was lying and not where my parents thought I was at that age. I'm not condoning anything, anyone's behaviour, but, you know, I mean, I know... It's well documented that I have a lot of sympathy for... I feel really ashamed to say it to you, but I do have... I have had sympathy for South Sudanese boys, and I'm just trying to... And their families, and I'm just trying to... As I say, it's hard for me to look you in the eye and say it, but I just think, well...
I have a lot to deal with them. I tell you what, there's gangs of them... Is in Shepparton, Tarneat, Epping, Dandenong, Richmond. Their parents can't control them.
There's a lot of white... Boy, that's what I'm trying to say. I was a white 17-year-old girl and my parents couldn't control me, and that was in the 80s. Like,
yeah, but you weren't in a gang.
Wasn't I? Like, that's what I'm asking you. Like, I wasn't smashing up shops, and I don't want you to think that I was, or hurting people. But I don't know what I'm trying to say to you. But I just think at 17, it's hard to be calling around to see where your son is. Like, that's an adult. Or, you know, that's a year off.
I drove my children until they were 18, dropped them off, and picked them up. I knew everywhere where they were. I mean. So did all my friends. They all did the same thing. And we didn't have all this trouble back in those years. There wasn't gangs. There wasn't all this shooting every day, stabbing every day.
Well, I mean, we had a gang war in Melbourne only 10 years ago.
And it was only 10 years ago.
And there were no South Sudanese people in that.
Oh, these boys have been here since they were, pardon me, one's been here for 15 years, one's been here for 19 years, one's been here for 27 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they've all been here.
Yeah.
Not one of them were born here. They're all born over in Sudan.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you mean by that? What's you mean it's an Australian problem? You mean we've made it where, you know, this is an Australian issue? Is that what you mean? Or
I just think...
what do you think's going wrong here?
They mix with the wrong type of people.
Okay, yep, yep.
And this is how they've got in, and now they're forming their own gangs.
Because remember I said to you on the phone, what I found interesting in South Sudan is that...
I've been to Sudan.
When did you go to Sudan?
My husband was a ship's captain.
Ah.
And I travelled for years on the ships. Well, I've been lots of times to Sudan. I've seen, don't you say one thing, I've seen
No, I was going to agree. I was going to just say that what I found talking to mums in South Sudan when I was there recently was they were having similar problems with boys of this age there.
Yes, they are.
So I don't know why. I don't know why. That's what
well, even
to...
the boy that I was interviewed, I had him on the TV.
Yeah.
You know, it stemmed from when he came from over there. He said that straight.
What did he say? What did he say?
He said, it's the way we're brought up. He said, you know, you don't have enough money to do this, you don't have enough. Go out and pinch something.
Who told him to go out and pinch
something? His parents.
Oh.
He said all the kids did the same. They wouldn't do it.
The parents wouldn't?
No.
But they encouraged the kids to?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's a bombshell.
Mm. So, you know, this boy that I was in... had in my interview, he was put in jail for the wrong reasons because, of course, Caucasians blamed him for the hitting of the head of the rock of the girl, and it wasn't him at all. And he did 3 years in jail.
I don't know that story. What, before your robbery?
Or after? I don't know when it was. It was up in Toowoomba.
Right, I see, I see.
Yeah, and how I interviewed him on the TV at my golf club.
I see.
Mm. And so, it's still going on. They're still robbing places, still going into office works, 10 of them at a time, and just taking what they want and all this sort of thing.
Where was that? When
did oh, there's numerous stores. Numerous stores with office works.
When did that happen?
Well, the last one was a few months ago.
Where did you hear about that?
With my brother's senior sergeant detective. Mm.
That, I wish he was here.
Mm.
That's interesting. So where does he work?
Well, he's just retired.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Before we, because I do want to talk to you about the police, your issues with police, but can we talk about just a little bit more about your face-to-face encounters with your attackers? The boy that you were, that was repentant, what did he say to you? How was that conversation?
He said to me that he's sorry for all the things that he'd done, and he realised how it had affected my health.
Did you feel he meant that?
Yes. He said, now I know how I've hurt my parents.
Interesting.
And the other brother just looked at him, you know, like this. And that's when the police, you know, looked at me as much to say, don't say anymore.
Oh. Did it have any kind of positive effect on you to hear that boy's...
Well, it was positive to think that one was at least repentant and the other one was just an out-and-out little crim.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd stolen cars and breaking and entering and all those sort of things. He'd been involved in and bashing people and...
Mm. And any of the other boys, did any of the other boys express remorse to you?
Yes, out at the centre, a couple of the boys over there, not all of them.
Yeah.
A couple of them did, to Stephen and I. And
does that help when, does that help with your PTSD or?
No, it doesn't help with my health because I still have the dreams of a night time with this gun at my head.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, if I ran into a black person, I'd just go into a panic attack and I'll either collapse or faint.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. That's,
It's terrible. I was up here at Aldi's about a month ago and I'm standing in the queue to come out and there was a lady and man here behind me, this colour, and there was two ladies in front of me. And I could feel myself going, you know.
Yeah.
And the man in front could see that I was going and he ran to me and grabbed me. And then they laid me down in the front of the shop.
You physically fainted almost, very nearly fainted.
Yeah, yeah. That's happened to me twice in shopping.
Because there were black people, African.
Oh, I've collapsed at the club. I belong to the golf club. Mm. And I've collapsed 3 or 4 times down there when black people have walked in. To go into the Bristow. Yeah.
And
I've been out in Burke Road at restaurants with the girlfriends having lunch or something. You know, they take me to lunch to get me out of the house.
Mm.
And a black person's walked in and I've been out cold on the floor. Yeah, it's just...
It's triggering.
Yeah.
It triggers the reaction, the physical reaction.
I just get frightened and I can't look. And then the next minute I know I'm on the floor.
Well, it sounds like maybe you can't breathe too.
No, I can't. I can't get my breath.
Yeah.
Then coughing. And... No, it's awful.
I'm assuming you're working with a psychologist on some level, right? You've got a...
Not now.
Counsellor. You're not having counselling now?
Insurance company won't pay. They won't pay any money. CGU. I'd like to go to air about CGU.
Go for it.
I have not paid for a tablet. Nothing. I've had my teeth fell out at the top.
Oh, wow.
They paid for nothing. They didn't do that. Any of my medical, things, taxi to go backwards and forwards, they said they weren't going to pay for that. So I stopped. I said, fair enough. I can't afford it. I don't earn any money anymore. And I said, I'm living on a pension. I cannot afford $74 to go to Ringwood and back.
Mm.
I'm sorry. And they said, oh, we're not paying for it. Stop that. My doctor, from the first robbery request, because I used to go to work for 2 days and played golf for 3 days. I was a very fit woman. You wouldn't have thought I was my age. And the doctor said, you need to get some physical, you need to get like exercise or yoga or something like that, or the other one, what's the other one?
Pilates?
Yes, Pilates. Yeah. She sent a letter. No way. I paid for nothing. And we paid for 40-odd years our insurance to them.
Through the business?
Yeah.
Through work, yeah.
And they haven't given me one thing.
Mm.
My bosses are irate.
Mm.
Irate.
So you're dealing with PTSD with no...
Nothing, with no support.
No support. No psychological support.
No.
With nightmares and panic attacks when you see a black person.
Yeah.
Gosh.
They did nothing. Just wrote a letter to me on there and said that from the 18th of October we're not... you're being wiped off our books.
Any victims of crime compensation money from the government?
Stephen and I got $1,000.
That seems weird to me.
But that was back in the first robbery. Can I ask, what were you doing in Sudan?
I went with SBS.
Oh, right.
You know that show, Go Back to Where You Came From?
Yeah,
yep. I did that.
Yep.
Because I have been so trying to be supportive of South Sudanese people in Melbourne. Mm. Obviously not supportive of criminals who hurt people, but trying to say that's...
Well, look, they're not all... I'll tell you another incident. I had to go to the bank and my neighbour drove me up to the bank up in Burwood Highway here.
Yeah.
And I'd finished and I came out and she was in the bank.
Yeah.
And two Sudanese boys came up and touched me on the shoulder and said, could you tell me where Kmart is?
Oh, God, how'd you go?
I went straight to the ground.
No.
Mm. And when I came to, my neighbours here said to me, the two boys, because she explained to them what had happened to me, and they said, tell her we're not all the same.
Yeah.
And when I came... and sat up and they got me too. The two of them came out with a bunch of flowers they'd bought at the florist and gave them to me.
Oh, bless them.
Hmm. They were older men though.
Yeah.
But, and I said to them, look, I'm terribly sorry. And they said, you don't have to be sorry. We understand. He said, we've got kids and we know what it's like.
Honestly, I know boys of the same age who struggle terribly with it, trying to get a job at KFC like any other kid.
Yeah.
And you think anyone
people won't put Sudanese on?
No.
They won't?
No, they won't. And
I went to a forum.
Yeah.
With work-wise, you know, and every company that were there said there was no way
Mm-mm.
that they would put Sudanese on.
I know. And that's what I mean. I work with Sudanese people trying to help them get jobs. Good people. And I promise you, not these people, you know, good people, good families.
Mm.
Parents who do know where their children are. Children who go to school and do well at school. Good boys who don't, who resist the temptation to join those other boys.
Well, this boy that I was confronted with from Toowoomba that was in winter jail, he lives over your western side, over that side somewhere, I think Altona or somewhere up there.
Yeah, that's where I am,
He's got a band.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I might run into him.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'll keep an eye out.
Yeah. He's really a nice man.
Yeah.
But see, got ganged up on him, the Australian bad boys up there, and blamed him.
Yeah, it's complicated. And
stupid at Daniel Andrews, he should have had a forum. And with people like myself and other victims of crime that things have happened to, all these bad kids should be invited along, right?
Mm-hmm.
And would they like this to happen to their mother or their sister, right, or their father, right? Or not only them either. These bloody magistrates that sit in the courts, they need to go.
Mm.
And it's all right to say, oh, yeah, we'll go to a psychiatrist. What can a psychiatrist do for somebody? That psychiatrist hasn't been through what I've been through.
Mm.
I have to help myself. I have to try and get over this phobia thing that I've got.
Yeah, but I think you also deserve help. I don't think you should have to do it all by yourself.
Well, I have been, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And my normal GP that I go to her all the time.
Great. And have you been seeing her for a long time?
Oh, yeah.
So she knows you well.
Yeah, yeah. But
do you take a lot of medication?
I'm now on blood pressure tablets and a backup tablet for that because I get bad, you know, upset tummy because of my nerves. I take a tablet for that and I take a vitamin D. That's all I take.
That's all you take? You're not on any sedatives or anything like that?
Do you know what? They gave me antidepressants and because I've got doctors in my family.
Uh-huh.
And they said to me, Elaine, put them down the toilet. Because they're addicted. You get addicted to them.
Because I reckon I'd be taking them.
Yeah, well, I nearly took an overdose of sleeping tablets one night. It was only for my neighbour that I didn't knock myself off. I'd had enough.
Yeah.
And she came in, as they say, God send her at the right time. Because I had these tablets beside my bed and I'd taken some of them. And then they pumped me and got that out.
Oh, my God, it got that far?
Yeah. But I don't have anything in the house now for sleeping or nothing. No. If I want a sleeping tablet, either of them will give me one. Like, some days they say to me, how are you coping? You know, did you sleep last night? Yes, yeah, slept for an hour and a half. You know, and the rest of the night I'll get up and I'll make myself a cup of tea or I'll read a book.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good cry, go back to bed and think, I might put the television on, see if there's anything on television. But, you know, like last night, 3 hours I slept last night. But 3 or 4 nights ago I slept for the longest I've ever slept in the 2 years that this has been going on. I slept for 5 hours. But I was tired. I was really tired. Because I was still black down on my face. I'm not as black. It's going. The optician said yesterday that it'll most probably be gone by the weekend.
Your shingles.
The shingles are gone. It's just now the bruising all coming out from the shingles in your eyes.
Do you think you're sort of overall getting better?
Well, they say to me that now that I'm doing things myself...
Mm-hmm.
I seem to be better, but I'm too nervy to go anywhere or do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to drive a long way, you know, what with the shingles in my eye, I couldn't see.
Yeah.
And they've been marvellous. They've taken me everywhere to doctors and opticians and shopping and bank and... but, you know, I don't... I've got hardly any super left. My super, in 2 years, I've spent so many thousand dollars on trying to get better. So, unreal.
It is unreal.
Yep.
All of it.
And, you know, everybody says to me, well, you know, what's the government or what's the insurance company? I said nothing. They wiped me completely. Said after the 18th, we, you know, you were off our books.
Do you own this house, though?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans for the future?
No, at this stage, no. No, I don't. I'd like to be back at work, but, you know, I don't want to put them through having to suffer me in there when I'm not well, and if somebody black comes in the shop and I don't, nobody's there and I've got to go out on the floor to say hello, can I help you, I'd be unconscious on my office floor, and which they know, you know. And then said to me the other day, do you think, you know, you'd be able to come back? And I said, Dennis, don't ask me that question now, because the way I feel, no, because I'm not healthy enough to come back to work. You know, when you only sleep a few hours, you get very tired. And you can't give your best to a job, especially with figures and things for me. You need to be on the ball. So I just have to... I have to see how I feel. But I'd say no, most probably. I think I did a good innings of working up until I was 76.
You really did. And still loving it. I love that you loved it, yeah. Though. And
I loved it every day when I'd get up to go, you know. And even if they needed me, you know, if somebody was sick or something, they'd ring up and they'd say, are you going to golf today? And I'd go, yeah, but I can put the golf off, I'll come in.
And I love the relationship you have with your bosses.
Yeah, we're like a big family.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, they're great people. Yeah.
How's Stephen going?
Stephen's well. He's just come back from New York.
Back at work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's had 5 or 6 weeks over in New York. Yeah, he had a lovely... Because he turned 50.
Uh-huh.
It was his birthday.
He won't thank you for telling us that.
No. But all his... all his friends turned 50 this year.
Yes.
I think there were 6 or 8 of them, and they all went over to New York and celebrated over there all together.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they had a lovely time. They went to Boston and Washington, and, yeah, they had a lovely time.
Yeah.
He just sent me photos of the dog, the new dog. And
I was wondering if you... Do you like pets? Are you an animal person?
Oh, I had 2 poodles.
Yeah. Would you get another pet?
Not at the moment, no.
Well, happy birthday, Stephen, and all your friends, by the way. And I hope you'll be pleased to hear that we have decided to dedicate some of our Patreon funds to ensuring that Elaine will receive free counselling for her PTSD for the next 12 months. Our friend Narelle Fraser, who is a PTSD sufferer herself, is helping us find the best person in Melbourne for Elaine. So, you know, she's in great hands. And I hope that our patrons are happy with that use of their funds as well. So thank you so much to all of our patrons. Thank you so much, Elaine, for being part of this episode. Thank you so much, Stephen, for taking good care of Elaine on those 2 awful days. And as I said earlier, I don't think Daniel Andrews is a stupid head, and I'll be voting for him in the state election. Good luck, everyone.